The Obama administration proposed its 2012 defense budget this week, and despite all the wrangling in Washington about slashing the deficit, it ranks among the largest defense budgets ever. Joining us now to fill us in on the details is Winslow Wheeler, director of the Strauss Military Reform Project at the Center for Defense Information. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today for today's second backstory segment. Hello.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Now, altogether, the Obama administration's proposed 2012 budget is slightly over $700 billion with a $553 billion baseline. What's the difference between the $553 billion and the $700 billion?
Well, this is a good example of the slipperiness of some of these numbers. I'm looking at a table I put together. The so-called National Defense Budget Function is $703 billion. The Pentagon's share of that is $676 billion. And of that $678, $118 is for the war in Afghanistan and the end of the occupation in Iraq. And so the so-called base budget of the Department of Defense is $676 billion, but none of that addresses everything we pay for national security or defense with a small d, or security, however you want to call it. Add the costs for the Veterans Administration, the Department of Homeland Security, State Department foreign aid and international arms sales, and some obscure accounts in the Treasury Department that are actually defense accounts. And we get to almost $1 trillion. So pick the number you want. Just describe it as the Pentagon's budget or the defense budget writ large.
Well, how does it compare to defense expenditures in 2011? Did we ever parse them out any differently?
Well, normally we can make those kinds of calculations, but this year we can't because Congress hasn't dealt with the budget for the year we're currently in, the 2011 budget.
Wait, I have to understand this. So we're talking about the 2012 budget now, but we haven't passed the 2011 defense budget?
Absolutely correct. Congress didn't pass a single appropriations bill last year for fiscal 2011.
So where's the money coming from?
They passed instead something called a continuing resolution that is a complicated piece of legislation, but it basically says to the Pentagon, you get for this year, last year's budget, with a few adjustments. And just this week, the House is debating a bill to fix that and pass an appropriations bill for 2011, or maybe some kind of complicated redo of the continuing resolution. It's none of it's clear. Yesterday, they voted down one defense program. They voted to not accept various amendments to make minor and sensible reductions in the defense budget.
But mostly they voted, the House voted to kill a controversial jet engine program for the F-35 fighter. In an article in today's New York Times, said the project was meant to create competition with another engine and drive down prices on what would eventually be up to $100 billion in engine purchases. Does that argument make any sense to you?
Well, yes, it does. If the F-35 were a good aircraft, and it's not, but if it were a good aircraft, it's an excellent idea to compete engine manufacturers against each other. We did that in the 1980s for the F-16. We got better engines and cheaper engines from it. The problem this time around is two things. One is that the engine that this the airplane that this is going into, the F-35, is a disaster of a design. It's unaffordable. It's a step backwards in performance in many respects. We shouldn't just cancel the GE engine, the so-called second engine. We should cancel the Pratt & Whitney engine also. We should cancel the whole program and start over again. The other problem is that if they didn't accept that advice, and they won't, and say if they did, quote, compete unquote, the second engine, they'd end up not competing it. They would end up, in today's politics, just cutting the baby in half rather than each year pitting the two manufacturers in a knockdown, drag-out fight over who gets the lion's share of the contract. But in today's world, we don't do that. We split contracts in half. For nuclear submarines, we're going through the preposterous exercise of building half of Virginia-class submarines in Connecticut and the other half in Virginia. Hmm. And then we weld them together.
And the engine program provided 1,000 jobs in House Speaker John Boehner's district. Aren't many of these large defense projects ultimately jobs, programs? A reason that some of the loudest voices for deep budget cuts actually voted for continuing to fund the engine program?
Well, it's certainly true that the manufacturers distribute the subcontracting for these programs all over the country in order to be able to extort or buy, more likely buy, the votes of members of Congress. However, these are lousy jobs programs. The University of Massachusetts at Amherst did an excellent study a couple of years ago on the efficiency of defense spending versus education or transportation, health care, or even tax cuts in generating jobs. And the defense budget was pretty much dead last in terms of the number of jobs it generated, and was a poor third and fourth place in terms of the quality of jobs it created. So if you're interested in jobs, don't invest in the defense budget. Invest in education or transportation or even tax cuts.
What about the arguments for building something like this? Considering the way geopolitics has changed since the end of the Cold War, shouldn't we be wondering why we even need the next generation fighter jet?
Well, this is the kind of thing we try to explain in a new publication we just put out. The title of it is The Pentagon Labyrinth, 10 short essays to help you through it, and it's for explaining just this kind of issue. If you want a good air-to-air fighter, or if you want a good air-to-ground fighter, there are certain principles you need to observe, both in the design of the airplane and how you contract for it. We don't do that anymore these days. And, for example, in our book, it's actually a handbook guide to the Pentagon, we have two chapters that explain how best to design combat systems and what principles you need to follow and how best to acquire it. All of these are ideas we're not following anymore, but we've used in the past with great success. People interested in finding that book, it's for free. I'm not trying to sell anything here.
And we'll put a link to it on our show page at WNYC.org. Slate's Fred Kaplan also notes that the Obama administration's budget includes $24.6 billion for 11 new ships, including $4 billion for two new Virginia-class submarines and $1 billion for the down payment on a new aircraft carrier. Has the Navy had to explain what international contingencies we might need these weapons for? Does building aircraft carriers in the current political situation, geopolitical situation, make any sense?
It makes very little sense. Secretary Gates himself said last year that we should probably reduce the number of aircraft carrier battle groups we have. Then, unfortunately, a week or two after that, he said he's sort of sorry he said that. I guess the Navy kind of beat up on him. We had 15 aircraft carrier battle groups in the 80s to deal with the Soviet Navy. It will surprise the Navy to learn that Soviet Navy doesn't exist anymore, and there is no conventional Navy we need to worry about, including the Chinese Navy. They are instead building things that
make... What about the Spanish Armada? Is that a concern?
or the Imperial Japanese Navy. The Chinese are specializing in not duplicating our Navy, but in systems that'll sink it. If there were such stupid national leadership that we got involved in a conflict on the high seas with China, aircraft carriers would be little more than targets, not just for their brand-new ballistic anti ship missiles, but also for their diesel electric submarines and for their very fast, very low altitude anti-ship missiles that we've not been able to successfully defeat for a very long time. The Navy is busying itself, spending large amounts of money, and the new carrier will cost something like $11 or $12 billion for one ship, which will turn out in a major conventional conflict with a competent enemy in the future to be little less than a target.
My guest is Winslow Wheeler of the Center for Defense Information. President Obama often speaks about building a nuclear weapons-free world, and yet this budget also includes lots of money for nuclear weapons, including $1.4 billion to buy 24 new Trident II submarine-launched ballistics missiles, $1 billion in research and development funds for a new nuclear missile submarine, and $2 billion in R&D for a new nuclear bomber and modifications of the Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Right. It's a sad story that a perfectly legitimate arms control agreement is resulting in an increase, not a decrease, in spending for these systems. In order to get it passed the Senate and to get a two-thirds majority vote that you need for treaties in the Senate, President Obama had to sell his soul in terms of spending for our nuclear infrastructure to get the votes he needed to.
In the Senate? The Senate still has a majority of people in the president's party.
Well, there's not 67. He couldn't get the 67 votes he needed without buying off some Republican votes, including prominently Senator Kyle from Arizona.
But isn't Kyle talking about cutting the rest of the budget to the bone?
Absolutely. Many, but not all, Republicans are talking about serious cuts in the so-called non-defense discretionary budget. That's the part of the budget, of the federal budget, that gets annual appropriations other than defense and other security-related agencies. That's only about 10% of federal spending. They want to focus on that for cuts, not on the rest. Meanwhile, the Defense Department, again, from most of them, but not all of them, is getting a free ride. And even when they say defense is, quote, on the table, unquote, what they're really talking about in their own minds is tiny little reductions in defense spending, maybe for military bands or something like that. In effect, defense is at the table, not on the table, when these people use that kind of rhetoric.
We have very little time left, but I just want to address one issue. It's been said that the Pentagon can't pass an audit. And is it even required to audit itself on things like the F-35 program or those notorious $500 toilet seats that we heard about in the past?
The Constitution requires an audit. The 1921 General Accounting Office Act requires it to be audited. The CFO Act of 1990 requires it to be audited. The Defense Department has, in effect, exempted itself. It's not that DOD flunks audits. You flunk an audit when you find out that the money wasn't spent as you intended. It's that DOD can't be audited. We don't know how the money is spent. It's that bad. GAO and the Defense Department Inspector General have written hundreds of reports about this for decades.
And we have to leave it there, unfortunately. But my great thanks to you, Winslow Wheeler, who is director of the Strauss Military Reform Project at the Center for Defense Information. We've been talking about defense spending and the 2011-2012 defense budgets. Thank you so much for being with us today.
I appreciate it. Sorry, so talkative.